It's wonderful to see you folks this evening. Welcome. And just in case you're new or tuning in on Facebook, this is Heart of Freedom Meditation, sponsored by Portland Insight Meditation Community. I'm Doug Pullen. It's a pleasure to be here with you. And we'll be getting started with some meditation in just a minute or two. I'd like to invite you to just make yourself comfortable, get settled, and to bring the focus of attention kind of more inside, so letting go of preoccupations, cares, concerns from the day, so we can just come to rest more fully in the present moment. And if it's helpful, maybe just briefly, as you bring the focus inside, to just let your awareness kind of gently sweep through the body. And to just check in. Sometimes we show up for a sit or a meditation, and there's some, you know, residual stress or tension or constriction. So just a little attending to familiar places where the body might hold on to that can be a kindness. So, noticing forehead and the region around the eyes and mouth. Sometimes we hold on to tension there, constriction. Maybe letting the jaw drop open and just letting things release and then gently close again. Or perhaps shoulders and neck. It's an area where a lot of us hold tension, constriction. See, if we can't release it, maybe we could just let it soften a little bit. And there's also just the torso, the chest, diaphragm, belly. See if we can allow things to soften, release. Maybe it allows the breath to just naturally have more space or room. We're not trying to force anything. It's more just through awareness itself, just letting things soften, release. Yeah, and then maybe it makes it a little easier to attend to the posture of the body so that it's supporting the practice of being alert and awake in whatever way your body can do that. Some bodies need a lot of support, and sitting really upright and straight isn't really necessarily so possible, but in whatever way your body can show up this evening and support this being alert. So it's being alert and yet relaxed at the same time. That's the invitation, kind of that balance there. And sometimes I find it helpful in the beginning, speaking of balance, to just let the body sway a little subtly back and forth, front to back. Just, finding that kind of plumb, balanced place. And it might be helpful if there's still any residual kind of agitation or stress, maybe to take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths. Just let the breath be like a massage from the inside. To hold as our primary intention is really being present and being kind. You know, kindness with presence, presence with kindness. And sometimes is helpful in the beginning to just really align ourselves with our deepest intentions, with what it is that we would like to take refuge in. So in the Buddhist tradition, there's a tradition of taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. But that could be translated or expanded into discovering what it might mean to take refuge in this capacity to be awake. So taking refuge in awareness. And taking refuge in the Dharma could be taking refuge in the direct experience of the truth, discovering from our own experience what's true. And to take refuge in the Sangha could mean taking refuge in love, taking refuge in our mutual support, in our community of mindful harmony where we support each other in this practice. So yeah, that those could be kind of the touchstones as we do this practice of being present. And to enter as fully as possible into the world of breathing, into the way your body experiences the breath. And just letting go of thoughts and concerns so that you can better sense and feel those embodied experiences that let us know that we're breathing. And breath is a wonderful object or training tool because it's always in flow or change, and it's right here in the present moment, and we don't have to think about it. It's just here, these sensations, this experience of rising and falling. Maybe it's more the expanding and contracting of the chest. Maybe it's the touch of the breath at the tip of the nostrils. And it's really letting the breath breathe itself. So we don't have to try and change breathing. And in fact, the just allowing the breath to breathe itself really is part of the cultivation of this this attitude of radical acceptance of things just as they are. We're not trying to force anything or make anything happen. It's more just the willingness to allow it to be just as it is. Acceptance of this breath, whether it's deep or shallow, or short or long, that is the practice of cultivation, cultivating this capacity to be here in this moment with the way things are. And if we find ourselves getting pulled into identification with discursive thinking process, there's this wonderful opportunity to wake up to that, noticing thinking. We don't have to try and stop it. We can just let it run its natural course and return to the breath. So it isn't the breath in opposition to thinking. Mindfulness, there's room for everything. It's in the cultivation that we choose to stay present with the primary object. Helps strengthen our capacity to notice things and to have some concentration. And it's really giving ourselves over to breathing, so that breathing has a chance to settle us and calm us. And so we center around the breathing, so awareness coalesces around those embodied sensations of breathing. just a simple invitation. See if you can incline towards your breathing as you might incline towards a child or a beloved pet with curiosity and tenderness. Not trying to cling or resist. Just, yeah, present. And please don't be concerned when your mind naturally wanders away from the embodied sensation of breathing. Yeah, don't worry about how often the mind might wander. We're just gently returning to the embodied experience of this breath. It's like escorting a puppy or a child that's gone off course, just coming back with that same kind of care and concern. Of course, it needs a little guidance. and seeing if it's possible to feel your whole body breathe, gently moving with the rising and falling of the breath, like the movement of the sea, a gentle sea rising and falling, the ripples of the breath move through the body, inviting us more deeply into the present and into acceptance of this moment. This moment is like this. Regardless of whether what we're experiencing is pleasant or unpleasant, or whether it's what we think should happen in meditation or not, the practice is about stepping out of identification with all ideas about what should be or shouldn't be happening, and being the space, like the ocean. It's big enough to hold whatever's happening in this moment, with the breath at the center. Each experience of the breath rising and falling is an invitation to deepen into the expanse of being beyond the limitations of the story that we tell ourselves about ourselves and others. Stepping out of identification with thinking and noticing when we get pulled back in. Of course, there's going to be thoughts, the momentum of conditioning. Sometimes it's really strong. And sometimes there's space that opens up around it. we can see it more clearly, the inner dialogue. Without trying to make anything happen, just being open with the breath right here at the center. If there's a modicum, at least, of stability and centeredness on connection with the breath, you might experiment with turning towards the stream of commentary or judgment or, inner dialogue that runs through. Maybe it's quite silent. Maybe there isn't really much happening right now. So you can just notice that and enjoy that space. But when it starts up again, or if you're noticing it, see if it's possible to just observe it as thinking. Not trying to make it go away, but actually letting it be a mindfulness object. It can be a little tricky. It's hard not to get sucked in. But there's always the breath to come back to. This invitation to notice the process of mental conditioning, mental formations, will dovetail with our focus this evening on speech. So, just an invitation. Like I said, if that seems a little too much to try to take on, we could just center in the breath, just the embodied experience of breathing. If you're finding it challenging to even stay with the breath, you could try putting a hand on the chest or the belly, kind of amplifies the experience of the breath. So letting the breath breathe itself, but maybe noticing with that added sensory contact. And just a reminder, from start to finish, this practice is done with a kind, friendly attitude and intention. So if you find yourself tensing up or there's any constriction or, breath gets constricted, just relax. Come back to that ease that we were cultivating at the beginning. And to the degree that you're practicing mindfulness of thinking and the inner dialogue, see if it's possible, if there's any tension or constriction associated with that, it's possible to just relax, soften any pressure or tension or tension around that. Letting your brain, your thinking brain, relax in the same way that you let a muscle relax. And then as we bring this meditation to a close, letting go of thinking enough to recenter yourself on breathing, just letting thoughts recede into the background and entering into the world of breathing, and see if it's possible to stay connected to a few consecutive breaths in a row. So at the end of a meditation, it's helpful to see if there's a way to keep a kind of a thread of mindful curiosity going. So even though we aren't maybe as concentrated and focused as we would be, because there's other things that are going on, we can maybe transition through taking a few moments to attend to the body, see if there's any little bit of stretching or movement that would like to happen as a gesture of kindness and opportunity to bring mindfulness into movement. Yeah, maybe letting shoulders move or neck or, yeah, whatever is helpful, but not having it be in, you know, a kind of, okay, now I don't have to pay attention. It's more like, yeah, this is an invitation to, yeah, benefit from our practice, being present with embodied connection, what's happening. So, yeah, and as we're doing that, I'd like to share just a few brief announcements. First, just a message from our generous sponsor, which is all of us. The practice of dana, of generosity, is what makes this evening possible. With all of the volunteer efforts and financial contributions to BIMC. So I posted in the chat a little description about the practice that you can look at and a link to the virtual Dana Bowl. And it's, yeah, there is no charge. So it's just an opportunity for you to connect with what brings you joy. The joy of giving in support of something that's hopefully beneficial in some way. So there's that. And then I was thinking about you, Doug O'Dell, with volunteers for the center. Doug, with Doug and Karen, there is our volunteer coordinator. And so we could use some more volunteer help on Sunday morning. And so you can reach out to Doug. There's, I think your email is on the website, isn't it, Doug? Yeah. So you can connect if you'd like to volunteer, particularly on Sundays. So there's that. And then coming up this Saturday, there's an autumn equinox meditation movement and sound healing. And that's going to be brought to us by Candle Summers and Phyllis Moses. And that's, this Saturday from 10 to 4. Sounds wonderful. And then coming up in a couple of weeks on October 11th, Robert Beattie is going to be teaching the Noble Eightfold Path class. It's from 7 to 9. Yeah, that's a series of, I think it's 8 classes. There's information on our website about that. And then last, but certainly not least, is a Karma Yoga Day on Saturday, October 14th from 9 to 2. A chance to help clean up the center, both inside and out. So another practice of Dana. I missed one thing. Jim Dalton is doing a Qigong and mindful movement day long on October 21st from 10 to 4. So there's that. Like to give us an opportunity to weave the web of community through a brief check-in, just to hear if you'd like to share. It's totally optional, but from the group, about what's alive for you this evening that would be helpful to give voice to. And the little bit of structure with this is just to speak from the heart, make space for others, and when you start, if you'd like to share your name, and then when you're finished, just say, I've spoken, or I'm finished. So then the next person knows that it's their turn. And it's wonderful to give people a clear space to not engage in crosstalk. So we really just give a clear space for just sharing. So that's it. Totally optional. And I'll start. My name is Doug, and I had a really wonderful time offering the Basics of Mindfulness class before this evening, so I feel like I've really warmed up and just really treasuring our time together. It's so precious. So thank you. Thank you all for being here. Oh, I've spoken.
Hi, I'm Doug as well. Feeling refreshed after I'd be a little drowsy to start that. Thank you for the reminder about volunteering. I will say that that is a very alive part of Donna for me, and I enjoy all my volunteers tremendously and the time we spend doing those works. I'm finished. Thank you.
I am a spring-loaded mousetrap that, when triggered, makes the noise clay. I'm happy to be here, happy to spend space with all of you. Been away for the summer. I'm thinking I probably need to share space with Sangha during the winter. So I really thank you for being here and sharing space with me, and may all beings benefit from the merits of our practice. I'm done.
Hi, Doug. Hi, everyone. My name's Anne. Doug, I have a question, and it's just bubbled up and surfaced in this sit. I have this phenomenon oftentimes early in the morning. I'm just wondering about the invitation for emptying and clearing that spaciousness. But what happened, and thankfully after the week I've had, what happened in this sit was just a moment of, a moment of solution to an issue. And then back to actually focusing on my breathing. So I'm curious about how that works, or the almost the miracle of that.
Okay, yeah. Well, so would it be okay with you if I circle back to that?
Sure.
Yeah, so
sure.
That's where I'll start. After we hear from whoever else
okay.
would like to share. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, great.
Soraya, I've been having some stress around work, and I found myself doing some rumination, and it's been really helpful to center around just what's happening in the present moment, or even more perhaps specifically, what isn't happening, that is, what isn't wrong right now. That helps me worry about the future less, and I think probably staying calm probably helps me problem solve when it's time to do that. So practice is definitely helping. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Rita. I just am hoping to focus on deepening the attention and concentration of my mindfulness meditations. I know that the mind can be trained, and I am also aware more and more that the Buddha didn't say just be with whatever happens, but the Buddha really recommended that we train the mind, that we learn to cultivate a sense of well-being within ourselves, that we choose which emotions we want to focus on. And that gives me great hope. Instead of just being somebody who sits and sucks it up and makes it all okay, I really like the proactive approach of taking responsibility for where my mindset is and working with it. So, thank you.
Thanks. So, anybody just on the edge of sharing? Yes, Lisa.
Hi, I'm Lisa. I just found out about this about 5 o'clock. Zahavi sent out an email, which I really appreciate. And I knew immediately that I wanted to do this tonight. I'm just on the other side of our holy days, where there was an awful lot of reflective time and deep inquiry inside, praying. So I feel like I came into this with a little bit more of a blank slate than I normally would, which was wonderful. And I'm also sitting with grief over the loss of a beloved soulmate dog on Sunday. And I found myself very, just feeling very blocked today and just sad and but not really able to release. And there was something about being able to breathe that helped me release some of that sense of locked upness that I've been feeling today. You know, the grief kind of comes and goes. Another thing I want to share is that I've been getting into songwriting, and I've been looking for a couple lines in this one song that I'm working on, which is about being in the moment. And so there were a couple things you said, and it was like, oh, I want to stop, because I had some ideas. And what I said to myself was, no, it's okay, just be here, and those things will come. And I could just feel calm about not capturing the thoughts that came that would maybe be the finishing touches. So I was just kind of trusting that that process will open up. So it was really nice to be here. Thank you, Zahavi, for letting us know about it.
Well, thanks for sharing. So I'm going to circle back here to kind of pick up Anne's question. Anne, could you restate it just briefly?
Sure. I guess in some ways it's a question about the spaciousness of clearing the mind and focusing on the breath that then opens, that then it's not perhaps the restlessness or agitation or not being able to settle or the five hindrances at all. It's a kind of creative place that bubbles up solution or an opening of seeing something maybe in the habituated ways, and then all of a sudden there's a turn, there's a change of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's clear enough. That's what I'm asking about, is that
mm-hmm.
that ferment or the in some ways it's creativity that releasing all of the five, getting out of the way of myself allows for the creativity. Does that help?
Yeah. Well, and yeah. So that's wonderful. And you have that experience, and it does seem that the essence of creativity is when we're free from habitual conditioning. That this spark of artistic creativity is really connection with something that's beyond the known. Otherwise, it wouldn't be creative. And our minds are repositories of conditioning. There's no original thoughts. They're just repetitions or reorganizations of what we've experienced in the past. So the spaciousness that opens up in the present moment makes room for spontaneous creative responses to what's alive in the present. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So instead of being acting in a habituated, conditioned way, we can be responsive to the conditions we find ourselves in. And there's a lot of room for creativity there. Yeah, so that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Doug.
So like to talk a little bit about mindful speech, skillful speech. And this will just be, whatever can happen in a relatively short time, a short Dharma talk. And just an invitation to once again listen, not so much trying to figure things out analytically or remember anything in terms of knowledge, but more to remember what you know in your deepest heart, in your being about this practice. So like I've said many times, Dharma talks aren't really to teach us something. It's more about helping us remember what we already know in our bones, to take that deeper. Skillful speech or mindful speech, sometimes referred to as right speech, not right necessarily as opposed to wrong, but more right as in right on or helpful, useful speech, is really an outward reflection of our inner dialogue. So speech in one form or another is thoughts manifest. So that's useful, and at least useful to me. It's useful in the sense that I can cause a lot less harm in the world if I notice it before it actually escapes my mouth. And I can observe that impulse or that reaction before it manifests as speech or action. That's where mindfulness comes in really handy in reducing anguish and stress and conflict. If I can just notice it at that nascent level, and meditation practice can really help with that. Because in this practice, it isn't about trying to get rid of thinking, like I was suggesting during the guided meditation. It's actually when there's enough presence, mindful presence, and concentration that we can actually turn towards thinking, observe thinking, just like we observe the breath, just like we can observe body sensations. We can observe mental states and emotions. And if we're able to do that, then we can cause a lot less suffering. We can also bring more joy and delight and beauty into the world, because just like not saying something that's harmful is helpful, saying something that's helpful is also really important. Saying something that needs to be said. Saying something that's that may even be in the form of a confrontation that's compassionate might be really important. I'm just thinking of an example from today. I was talking with a student who whose family is planning Thanksgiving, and one family member, a sibling, was going to preemptively disinvite another family member without the agreement of the elders and other family members. And my student, who's been practicing for a while and also practicing nonviolent communication, was able to speak up and actually say, you know, it doesn't, I'm feeling sad because my need for including all of our family isn't being met. And so there was, it was an important thing to speak out, to speak the truth. So it isn't about not speaking necessarily. It's about, it may well be speaking and saying some of the most important things that we need to say. And so there's the outward guidelines for speech that the Buddha offered as a kind of jumping off point. And he said, skillful speech is, it's spoken at the right time, it's spoken in truth, it's spoken affectionately or with kindness. It is spoken beneficially. It is spoken with a mind of goodwill. But, you know, kindness doesn't mean that we don't say difficult things. Sometimes the kindest and most compassionate thing is hard to hear and say. So that's an important thing. Without a commitment to the truth, there is no Buddhist path. Dharma is a synonym for truth. Dharma practice is synonymous with living a life of truth. And it isn't the truth that's written in books or dogmas or philosophies. It's the truth that's discovered through direct experience. And in my observation, one of the primary characteristics of psychologically and spiritually mature people is that they don't lie to themselves. Being honest with ourselves is really a prerequisite to personal growth and liberation. And it's appealing. It isn't that the whole truth is necessarily readily available to us at any given moment. We do the best we can. It's like peeling layers of an onion. But that's the trajectory. That's the process. And in this practice, truth is balanced with kindness and compassion, and it brings peace by overcoming the conflicts and turmoil that we carry in our minds. That this kind of truth brings an inner security that frees us from neurotically defending, apologizing for hating or hiding ourselves from others. It can help us overcome conflict between people. And truth isn't the same as facts. Facts alone don't carry power, whereas truth does. An example of this is Mahatma Gandhi expressing this in coining the term Satyagan Ariya, or the power of truth. Gandhi inspired Dr. Martin Luther King back in the 1960s, translated truth as soul, and so it became soul power in the civil rights movement, based on truth. Gandhi once said, "I only have three enemies. My favorite enemy, the one most easily influenced for the better, is the British Empire. My second enemy, the Indian people, is far more difficult. But my most formidable opponent is a man named Mohandas K. Gandhi. With him, I seem to have very little influence." honesty. I mean, that's really the challenge for all of us. Happiness is an inside job. And cultivating a relationship of self-compassion. So that's the kind of the overriding kind of invitation with this turning towards speech, is we can start to cultivate a relationship with this mind-body process that is one of friendliness and curiosity and compassion. And that interpersonal relationship then is mirrored in our interpersonal or external relationships. So with mindfulness, we can actually hold space for the inner dialogue. We can observe it without being totally identified with it. And that changes everything when we get to that place. So there's a variety of forces that come together to give truth power. One is the force of inner purity and calm that comes from honesty, and another is the confidence that comes from knowing what's true. And having being in touch with our deepest intentions, are the deepest parts of us, the qualities of heart that are free from greed, hatred, and ignorance. So what are those? Wisdom, compassion, loving kindness, altruistic joy, generosity. So our speech is an outward manifestation of what we connect with inside. And we there's a case of mistaken identity. We tend to identify with the kind of layers of conditioning that aren't really actually reflective of our true nature. Our true nature is the nature of the world, of interbeing, of interconnectedness, of love, compassion, wisdom. But we lose touch with that. We get a case of mistaken identity. I was sharing with someone earlier today, we were talking about humor and the importance of humor and personal growth, and I shared a story from Ram Dass. He said, this being human is a case of mistaken identity. We're all God in drag. We think that we're much less than what we actually are. And so waking up to our interbeing, our interconnectedness. And then speech comes from that place. Because when I'm talking with you, I'm talking really to myself. And how would I want to be talked to? So there's that realization. And if I'm under the delusion that you're the other, that you're an object, that you are, you know, bad or whatever, then of course my speech is going to be unskillful. So part of this is a practice of seeing through that delusion. So, I mean, for most of us, I think we understand that speaking the truth is important. And we don't always do it, but we get that part. But then there's all kinds of layers and permutations. It's hard. It's we don't always know what's the most compassionate or skillful thing. And so we have to be willing to make mistakes and be willing to learn and grow. There's no way to do this perfectly. And if we set ourselves up with that expectation, it just causes tons of suffering. So we're trying to act in a way that is moving towards our deepest values and ethics, and have that be reflected in our speech and action. From the vantage point of the Dharma and the Buddha's teachings, there aren't any moral judgments. And so these are training guidelines to reduce suffering. So it's very practical, very pragmatic. And to understand that this isn't an invitation to judge ourselves negatively when we mess up, or to believe that we're somehow going to be damned or go to a bad place if we don't get our act together. It becomes much more apparent in the present that when we're not in harmony with our deepest values and beliefs, it hurts. It just doesn't feel good. That becomes more and more nuanced and more of a guide. Jack Kornfield shared, I think I sent this out in the announcement for today, at first, precepts like speech, action, livelihood are a practice that guide us. Then they become a necessity. It's like, oh, it just feels too painful to act in ways that are out of sync with what those deepest values and beliefs are. And then finally, it becomes a joy. It's a source of joy. So rather than being a should, have to, ought to, when our heart is awakened, they spontaneously illuminate our way in the world. He called that shining virtue. And the light around someone who speaks the truth, who consistently acts with compassion for all, even in great difficulty, is visible to all around them. That's Jack Kornfield, Insight Meditation teacher, senior teacher. So the precepts are useful as a starting point and as a touchstone. And then we start to discover our own intrinsic reasons to abide in that way. And the deeper the understanding, the more natural it becomes. So, to be aware of the inner dialogue can be unflattering at times. I teach a self-compassion retreat, and one of the things that comes up there as people start to reflect on how they talk to themselves, a lot of times people discover, I would say this is the majority of most of the groups in the beginning that I work with, they're much harsher and unkind to themselves than they would be to a good friend. When you think about a friend in distress and think about how you would respond to that person who's really hurting, imagine the words, the gestures, the whatever you would do, and then imagine yourself in the same situation. What would your response be? And often it's very different. And the question is, how come? Why are we harder on ourselves? And what is the, what is the consequences of that? So there's an invitation to reflect there. There's some exercises that could be helpful. I'll just suggest these, something to consider, that you could use as a take-home practice. The first is for a day, practice only saying what is true and helpful. The exercise has multiple benefits. First, it requires being sensitive to your own experience to see what's true for you. And for actually, the only thing you can tell the truth about is your own experience. And second, it helps us to notice all the temptations to lie or fudge. And we can be sensitized to the fears, phobias, dubious motives, and hidden agendas that color our words. And to enhance the benefit, it's worth taking some time at the end of each day to reflect on our own experience. Was I tempted to fudge? And if so, what was the reason? What did I gain from truth-telling? Like less guilt? Perhaps a sense of strength and integrity. The truth-telling exercise requires only a few minutes during the day, but it can offer insights that endure for years. And the long-term goal is to eventually make truthful, helpful speech a natural, spontaneous way of communicating. So that's one exercise that you could try. It's to say only what is true and helpful. And then the next one that could be interesting is give up gossip. And for this exercise, choose a time period of perhaps a day. A week could be really challenging for some people. Then commit to not saying anything about other people unless you've already said or would be willing to say it to them directly. And whenever you find yourself tempted to gossip, to try to recognize the underlying motive. Again, non-judgmentally, with self-compassion. This isn't an invitation to beat ourselves up. And then to take some time at the end of the day to reflect on your experience. Notice the sense of integrity and strength that comes from holding to the truth, treating people with respect, refusing to succumb to hurtful talk. The Buddha said, better than 1,000 hollow words is one word that brings peace. And in advanced practice, this comes from Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh, speak out about injustice. Do the work to actually speak the truth to power in the spirit of Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King. The Buddha was a revolutionary in his day. He was a revolutionary voice against racism, the caste system. He said, not by caste, race, or creed, or birth is one noble, but by one's actions, one's heart alone is one noble. So, there's that invitation. Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh, in one of the precepts in the Order of Inner Being, said, don't say untruthful things for the sake of personal interest or to impress people. Do not utter words that cause division and hatred. Don't spread news that you don't know to be certain. And don't criticize or condemn things which you have not been sure of. Always speak truthfully, constructively, kindly, and have the courage to speak out about situations of injustice, even when doing so may threaten your own safety. Wow, that's challenging. And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said in one of his speeches, and these are prophetic words, and no matter where it leads, no matter what abuses it may bring, I'm going to tell the truth. And not long after he said that, he was assassinated. So finally, I'm going to finish up here with a powerful quote from Dogen, the Zen Buddhist founder, actually the founder of Chan in China, which is what turned into Zen Buddhism in Japan. He said, kind speech means that when you see sentient beings, you arouse the mind of compassion and offer words of loving care. It is contrary to cruel or violent speech. You should be willing to practice it for this entire present life. Don't give up. World after world, life after life, kind speech is the basis for reconciling rulers and subduing enemies. You should know that kind speech arises from kind mind, and kind mind from the seed of compassionate mind. Kind speech is not just praising the merit of others. It has the power to turn the destiny of the nation. So I'd like to invite now to take mindful presence into speaking and listening. If you'd like to share either, you know, your own experience with bringing mindfulness into speech, or if there's a question, something that came up for you this evening. And once again, it's totally optional. So, yeah, but let's try to make this part of our practice.
Yeah, this is a very powerful teaching, and it's something even to this day I struggle with. And, you know, speech is an imperfect thing, and what I say is, you know, if it wasn't imperfect, we'd have telepathy, right? So, but we don't. And many times the words I use can make people feel ways that I don't want them to feel and don't intend them to feel at all. And that's been a gigantic challenge in my life. And also in my life, I've been trained to use a lot of times violent speech that intimidates or show, you know, attempts to create dominance or a power dynamic in language, or to show that I'm an authority. And it's a constant struggle for me because I've been rewarded so greatly for this violence. And so it's a very, I definitely wanted to take a skillful speech class to get more sensitive to it. And so I'm definitely going to be trying your exercise more. And it's something I want to be way more mindful about. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Clay. Yeah. And it's wonderful to see you again, Clay. Yeah.
Hi, Susan here.
Hi, Susan.
I felt like when you were talking, my biggest struggle is with gossip. And it's, when I do it, it's not generally malicious, I don't think. I need to stop and look at my motives more closely, but I think it's just fascinating to observe people and then sometimes to talk about another person, a third person with another person when that third person isn't there, is sort of helps clarify my thoughts about them. It's just a really ingrained habit, like at work, for example. You know, if there's someone I'm close to at work, especially if I'm frustrated with some other person, it's like, oh, so-and-so's driving me nuts, I wish they'd blah, blah, blah. It's so habitual, and it's so habitual, it's kind of hard to imagine not doing it at times. So I'm going to have to really look at that. And as I said, like, look at my motivation. What do I get out of that? You know, man, I'm going to need to just study it, I think. Mm-hmm. So thanks for bringing that to my attention.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. Sounds like a skillful investigation on your part. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, we're just about at the end of our time. Anybody sitting with any other sharing or question before we bring things to a close? I can share a quote here from Thich Nhat Hanh. This is from a writing that he did on the art of communicating. He said, "Nothing can survive without food. Everything we consume acts either to heal or to poison us. We tend to think of nourishment only as what we take in through our mouths, but what we consume with our eyes and our ears and our noses and our tongues and our bodies is also food. The conversations going on around us and those we participate in are also food. Are we consuming and creating the kind of food that is healthy for us and helps us grow? When we say something that nourishes us and uplifts the people around us, we're feeding love and compassion. And when we speak and act in a way that causes tension and anger, we're nourishing violence and suffering." So there's that. And then as I was reading that, I was thinking of Tenisro Bhikkhu, who's a Theravadan Buddhist monk who came to PIMC quite a number of years ago. And someone asked him about the importance of diet and should we avoid eating meat and those kinds of things from a Buddhist perspective. And he said, well, you know, it's, you know, certainly helpful to consider how your body metabolizes, you know, food and those kinds of things out of self-compassion. But he said that it might be just as important or maybe more important to attend to what comes out of your mouth as opposed to what goes into it. So... Yeah. So, folks, I'd like to wrap up with a little metta practice. Just a and metta practice is a form of skillful speech cultivation. We can use metta phrases as a way to cultivate the good. And this kind of circles back to what you were sharing, Rita, about cultivating goodness. And so let's do a little bit of that if you'd like to. You're welcome to. Maybe just connecting with what's alive for you this evening. And if there's any place in your life where you find that there's kind of repositories of negative judgment or criticism or, you know, towards self or others, metta practice can be helpful with that. Holding space here with the support of the group. We don't have to take on the deepest, most difficult places, but something that might be amenable to a little bit of cultivation of kindness. Like, I'm learning to accept myself even when I mess up and say something that isn't completely true. I'm learning from my experience and growing when I make mistakes or May my heart, my true heart, be reflected in my speech and actions. Yeah, those are just some examples. So just noticing for you, what would be helpful this evening? What wish, aspiration would you like to hold for yourself? What seeds would you like to plant or water, cultivate? Yeah, noticing how it feels to bring the kind intention into the heart and mind. Seeing if it's possible to let it be an embodied experience. Letting these wishes be repeated, these aspirations. Yeah. So, yeah, for just a moment here, and of course you can do more on your own if you wish. And then to let our practice expand to include sharing our wishes of well-being, kindness with our Sangha, with our community, to be knowing that we are held and holding others in a field of loving intention and a virtual circle of loving kindness. We can imagine ourselves holding each other's hands and extending those wishes and accepting our humanity as we're all just learning and growing and making mistakes, and extending our wishes around the circle and out into the world to those who are near and dear to us, dear ones, friends, family. Yeah, may those beings be safe and well, protected. And out into the larger community and into all of the communities that we're interconnected with. To all beings everywhere, may our words, may our thoughts convey our deepest sense of being, of connection and love. And you're welcome to join me in chanting to send these wishes out. We can chant, may all beings be happy, and do that three times. You're welcome to unmute and then close with sadhu, which means so be it. Yeah, so let's give that a try. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you, my friends, for joining me this evening. And please, as always, take what's useful, whatever is good, put it into practice. Anything that's not helpful, just let it go. So you only take good things. And remember the truth of impermanence. Everything that has a beginning has an end. And so too our gathering this evening. So hope to see you again next week. And take good care. Yeah.
Thank you, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Good night.
Bye. Bye.